It's the Sod Pod, brought to you by Grassland Agro. The Sod Pod.
Hello, hello, and welcome to the Sod Pod. This is episode 16. On the last episode, we had a big crowd draw for Mike Birmingham. What a great farmer. Really interesting listen. What a character as well. This one might be a tougher one to draw in the crowd. We have a new member, which is exciting. We're going to cover a few other topics like the National Fertiliser Database, the Veterinary Bill, and even the weather. I think we've had 2 days of summer. So, look, bear with us. We'll see how we get on. And I'm joined with John O'Loughlin, Claire Aspel, Lauren Stanley, and the newest member of the technical team in Grassland Agro, Owen Quinn. Owen was an agronomist with us, and now he's joined the technical team as well. Owen, welcome on the show.
Thanks, James. Thanks for having me. So, yeah, I'm from a small village in County Tyrone called Arbo. I come from a dairying background here. Yeah, so I joined Grassland back in October 22, and I'm on the product and market team here now from just the start of July there. So, yeah, so thanks. It's good to make the debut. I'm an avid listener there, so
good to... we had to tell him... What the sideboard was, we had to tie him to the chair and put on the sideboard from start to finish as his training program, Jim.
20 yeah. hours of straight listening. It was like a torture technique in Guantanamo Bay.
Yeah. And come here. Well, it was even worse. He had to listen to last season as well with Sean and Dave. That's completely different stuff.
We'll see, not sure.
And Owen, what are you seeing now out there? Been a funny year, really.
Look, I suppose it's been a challenging year. That's been the feedback from a few farms. I heard a comparison today from the famous 1985, was it? I've heard that year quoted quite a few times. So when this year's been compared to the standard of weather that they had that time, it's certainly been challenging. But look, I suppose only saving grace there. For cuts this year, we got on fairly well in a stark contrast to, I suppose, 22. I suppose that's a bit of a saving grace in the fact that there's quite a bit of quality first cuts preserved. Look, there's still a proportion of the growing year left yet. So I suppose it's not a bad time to maybe take a wee step back, that if first cuts are being fed out and that, they take a step back and see, you know, where do I stand in terms of fodder reserves for the coming winter time, you know. But other than that, look, it has been a challenging year, both for silage-based systems, multi-cuts, and equally then for the grazing platform. So look, we've had a few days of good weather there now, so it's really very much a novelty. We'll make the most of them. But given the challenging weather conditions, I think we're doing fairly well now on the farming front. So take it as it comes.
Jim, what was 85 like?
Oh, you're very smart, John. Oh, I remember it well. I was three.
You were playing minor. That's here you done your division, was it?
John, you have a lovely haircut. If only this was been videoed. Bit of a buzz cut going on there, looking trendy. Yeah.
You inspired me blowing Mike Birmingham, so he rang me after and he said what happened to your man?
Yeah, wasn't that great? Look, in fairness. Now to move on swiftly. Claire, we've got an insight there from Owen from up the northern half of the island. Now, how's things looking down the south side?
Again, James, I'd say it's fairly similar to Owen. We've had a very challenging year. We've gone from droughts into too wet, back into droughts again. I suppose, again, the last couple of days, at least we have seen some sunshine, a lot of grass on the move, a lot of corn on the move. And it's just nice that we actually did manage to get a few days of the summer and to get those second cuts or third cuts in and just get a little bit of a respite and get it all in. Again, now I suppose you'll be kind of looking, taking stock of what grass growth is like at the moment. Can I drive it on further? And what can I do coming into the back end of the year? We've had the year that we had, and I suppose now it's just really trying to set you up for the best coming into the back end of the year and keeping those cattle out as long as possible, I suppose, is the focus at the moment.
And now, Lauren, you wanted to cover a very exciting topic. I'd say a lot of the lads will have to jump in to dig you out here, but the National Fertiliser Database. Yep. I can't even pronounce it.
Yeah, the National Fertiliser Database, the long-awaited database, is finally in motion. So there's been letters sent out to farmers, I think as of this morning or yesterday morning. There's been text messages sent out informing farmers on what are the next steps and what they need to do. So I suppose the whole idea of this database is that farmers will legally be obliged to register as fertiliser end users. So what this means is that all lime and fertiliser that's going to be bought from the 1st of September will be tracked and traced, and the herd number will act as a farmer's unique identification. So yeah, look, it's great that it's finally in place. It's necessary to keep our derogation, and the derogation is in a review year, so it's really, really important that it's implemented this year. So look, just a little quick synopsis of the letters that have went out. Key dates are from the 1st of September. If you are purchasing fertilizer or lime, you have to register as a fertilizer end user if you're a farmer. Merchants and co-ops, so the likes of Grass and Agro, will register as fertilizer economic operators. And from the 14th of September to the 15th of October will be the time period that farmers will have to declare their closing stocks of fertilizer that is on the farm, James.
Okay. Now, controversial statement, but it is kind of talk that's out there at the moment. Go and buy fertilizer now to try and trick the system. It's not really an option, though. Sure, it's not.
No, James, it's not really, to be honest, because look, it's farmers are saying the same, oh, we'll get loopholes and there'll be a loophole away and we'll be able to get around it. But unfortunately, we won't. There's a reason that it's in place at the moment and we have to obey by it. So, look, I'd say like the closing stocks for spreading fertilizer for nitrogen and phosphorus will be the 14th of September, this closing date. Fertilizer for next year, it's going to be tracked and traced, and we won't be able to buy it unless we provide that herd number. There'll be no such thing as going into a co-op and getting whatever you want and hoping that you can store it out the back. It just won't be possible anymore.
Yeah, I think, to be fair though, to the farming community as well, Lauren, they are fantastic to adapt to change. No one likes change. Yeah. It's a bit of a nuisance. Oh, where have I to go? The registration process doesn't look that complex if you have your information at hand. And once it's up and running, the community will row in behind it and protect derogation long term as well. And hopefully then, as that model starts to move forward into the future, that I suppose those involved in the red tape and the structures start to realise the good work that's been done out there and evolve this process as we move to kind of, I suppose, prove the points that so many farmers want to use the right volumes, the right amounts at the right time. And it's not about blanket spreading and all, because it's an amazing transition that's going on.
Yeah, and look, it's a very simple process. A farmer can do it by just logging on to their Ag Food, or else if they have an advisor with Chagas or a private advisor, they can do it for them. The department are trying to make it as smooth as possible. And it's literally just registering stocks and registering as that end user, and it'll be a smooth transition. And yeah, look, farmers are very good at taking it on board. And there's loads of Grass and Agro reps out there at the moment anyhow that can give you a hand and provide advice on it. But I suppose the main thing is declaring those stocks and getting ready for the 2024 soil sampling and fertilizer season.
Yes, yeah. I think as well, once the podcast goes live, you'll see down in the comments, we've just put in there the link to agfood.ie as well, just if anyone is unsure where it is. And I've also added a second link to that there as well, which is issue 7 of Out the Gap, where Lauren and Claire also covered a bit of this. And it's nice, though. Obviously, there's dates and numbers been thrown around here as well, but in written form as well, they've created that, which is a lovely little read as well. Johnny there was going to give his wise words.
Yes, I think that the fertilizer register is going to maybe make people a little nervous about buying fertilizer next year. There's a lot of change, lads, coming, and change can scare people, and it's going to be tracked and monitored. And the thing about this is that with the register, it comes in, right? If you go over your nitrogen or phosphorus limit, there won't be an alarm going off in the department head office to say, oh, I'm going to rush down and I'm going to arrest James Freeman for going over his limit on nitrogen or phosphorus, even though we'd encourage that. Just for our own amusement. But what's going to happen is that maybe 1, 2, 3 years' time, 4 years' time even, you have to be able to prove that you needed that phosphorus, that you had soil samples, number one. So this is going to bring about a massive knock-on on the number of soil samples that are going to be needed to be taken, because ultimately, previously, you were assumed to be index 3. Now you were assumed to be index 4. So farmers can get caught. the fines are quite significant. So the range in the fine for exceeding your limit is between 5,000 at the entry level to 100,000, right? And that's going to be based on a couple of different parameters, like the volume, whether it was a genuine mistake or not, whether there was intent. So there's an awful lot of factors that have come into it. But the other thing as well is that it could have a bearing on a farmer's derogation. So obviously this is brought in as a result of holding on to the derogation. It's stipulated in the review year that we have to have the register. And for that reason, I feel like it could possibly come in time in Northern Ireland as well, Owen, because there's 300-odd farmers who evaded the derogation in Northern Ireland as well. So I think this is going to be something that we're going to see a lot of. Obviously, people are talking about, you know, what do we need to do to be prepared for this? As Lauren did a brilliant job outlining, get your ducks in a row there on registering, doing your closing stock. And I think what's really important is to have the soil samples and have your nutrient management plan, whether that's as part of the Grass and Agro Soil Sustainability Programme or a private advisor or a CHAG, is having the confidence in what you're able to bring onto the farm is going to be very, very important. And I suppose we have a big team there of agronomists, Jim, that could help farmers to do that as well.
Yeah, exactly. We have 50 advisors across the island, and they're well trained and well versed on this, obviously spearheaded by yourself, John, and the team. And it's always great to talk and share information, and our guys can add some value to you there as well and help you along the way, because, you know, change is scary, but information is king, and being smart with the processes will avoid, fingers crossed in the future, any fear of any of those fines, as you say, because they are quite significant, you know, and that's the last thing we need by trying.
There could be another rub on that. That's just a fine for breaking the legislation. So this is a law now, like. You're breaking the law now if you do something maybe that you shouldn't, or buy nutrients. And one of the key things, though, I think maybe anyone who's worried about it, is that really optimizing soil health, we can grow the grass or we can grow the crops on these reduced levels of nitrogen. It is more than possible. It might take a little bit of time, but getting to the root of the problem now, if you have issues with soil health and you are maybe too reliant on chemical nitrogen, because there is another 5% cut coming next year as part of the derogation to the upper limit of chemical nitrogen, to get on top of that, I think is going to be really, really important. And it is more than possible to do it. It's not easy, but being strategic, having the right plan, and working across the three pillars of soil health, and it is definitely doable.
Yeah, and I think last year, because purchases of fertilizer and nitrogen in particular were down a good bit for various reasons, I think that proved to farmers that we can actually grow the same amount of grass with less chemical nitrogen, which is very significant. But yeah, no, just getting on top of our soil health is going to be key to it.
And Owen, if you were to look at some tips, obviously it's not directly impacting the area that you're based in, but what sort of things could you advise guys on managing soil health that could help alleviate some of the pressures or fears and concerns that are out there?
Yeah, look, I suppose what John said, he kind of hit the nail on the head. It's not easy, but we do see such a contrast on farms in terms of the level of inputs and nitrogen that is taken to, I suppose, sustain that enterprise. I suppose that doesn't happen by chance. I suppose situations whereby farmers are getting away with the lower rates, there has been a conscious effort to, I suppose, focus on soil health. That's probably one of the key drives on that particular farm, when there's been a real emphasis put on the three pillars of soil health. So I suppose something that stood out for me whenever I joined the team here at Grassland was that soil is actually a three-pillared scenario. I always just thought, right, if you do a soil sample, that's basically a nutshell. But in actual fact, it's only one pillar. It's the chemical side of it. It really does. You have to tie in all three pillars. You've got your biological and your structural. So that is something that what we do here as part of the Soil Sustainability Programme, we don't treat any greater, I suppose, in terms of importance than the other. They all have their role to play. Yeah, look, cutting back on fertiliser is one thing, but it has to be sustainable. Sometimes sustainability can be a bit of a buzzword. You automatically think, you know, in my mind, I think environmental, but it also has to be socially and economically sustainable. So look, the soil is the foundation of any farm enterprise. So moving forward, I think to tackle such challenges coming our way, whether it's in legislative, economically, environmentally. I personally think that soil is the way to go about it. And no other team than, I suppose, our team of agronomists there on the ground in terms of the soil sustainability programme there, just following the key steps upon it. But the gradual process, you don't solve soil health overnight. Mm-hmm. It is a gradual process.
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
Claire, do you think, obviously, you with your PhD in sulphur, is there a role for sulphur here as well? Or what sort of, like, this is kind of your moment to shine, the sulphur queen. What sort of stuff could be done here to be smart, or does this not help at all?
I suppose at the time of the year, kind of like we're in the middle of August now, heading towards the end, we're kind of looking, what grass can we grow until we put the cattle in and finish up for the winter? So what you can looking at, again, you'd be taking in consideration what kind of growth rates is out there. How well is your farm performing? And can I drive it on further maybe with some nitrogen? And if you are going to go and spread some nitrogen, how about going with sulfur? Both sulfur and nitrogen kind of are hand in hand, I see it as. By spreading your sulfur along with your nitrogen, you're going to get less chances of that nitrogen being leached through the soil. So in other words, your farmer is going to get more from the nitrogen. It's going to get more up into the plant and less of that nitrogen being leached to the waterways. So definitely, I think sulfur does have a role to play with it at this time of the year. Again, then, if you have put out your nitrogen and the nitrogen levels in the plant is too high, sulfur will also, again, help to convert that nitrogen into a better form of protein for the animals. So instead of being too lush or too high in nitrates, it's going to be a better quality. You're going to get more returns from, say, your finishing cattle or your dairy cows, whatever it's grazing. Or even if it is going to go for another cut, it's going to be just a better quality crop. Mm-hmm. So you're just going to get more out of what you're spreading. So I see as both sulfur to go in hand if you're thinking about spreading your nitrogen. But again, not to overdo it. Again, it's all how well is your grass performance, and again, just not to over supply either the nitrogen or the sulfur. So that's what I think.
Yeah, geez, ideal, yeah.
Well, I'm not going to doubt you anyway, Claire. Let's be honest about it.
What's good for the goose is good for the gander, is it?
And John, you wanted to kind of tip into another exciting topic, the veterinary bill.
Yes, I do, Jim. So as part of this very thoroughly entertaining episode today on legislation, the fertilizer bill and the veterinary medicine bill have come through at the same time. The fertilizer bill is probably one we're obviously more focused on, but it's causing, I suppose, a bit of a stir amongst the veterinary community, James. So basically, the legislation changed slightly, which was signed into law, that previously it was that for every single item to do with veterinary medicine, so even a basic warmer, that you could go into any merchant or co-op and buy over-the-counter or veterinary office, buy over-the-counter, now you need a prescription, right? Mm-hmm. So previously that was going to be based off a fecal egg count and a prescription from your vet. Now it has changed slightly that it just has to be a prescription from a vet, so that possibly it kind of changes maybe the way that remedies could be prescribed and creates a little bit more leeway. And it is causing a little bit of, I suppose, debate amongst the merchants and co-ops and veterinary practices. So it's probably one that we'll get Bernard Furlong on to be to debate with James going forward. Of course, Bernard the vet. I know from chatting to me, he's a strong view on it himself. And he's never shy of sharing his opinion. So it's one that we will chat about more, but just to make it simple, I suppose, for myself more than anyone, is that going forward, basically everything that you buy, you're going to need prescription for it. That could be something as small as a fly treatment, a fly repellent, or a warmer, as we were saying, anything that falls within that veterinary remedy basket. And ultimately, and if we go back to John Brennan's quote, who re-quoted, but it's down to antimicrobial resistance. And effectively, it's because more people are going to die of antimicrobial resistance than cancer in 2050 with the mounting resistance to antibiotics, which is an absolutely staggering stat, in my opinion. So what I think maybe any farmers that are listening are going to be pushing back and saying, oh, more paperwork, more red tape. And I just want to point out that we're just disseminating the knowledge. We're not coming up with the With the rules, Jim. Don't shoot the messenger is what I'm trying to say.
John, just while I have you there, and well, now that I can call John O'Loughlin a Kilkenny farmer, what are you doing on your Kilkenny farm to help bring down that antimicrobial resistance? Kilkenny being key there, not Clare.
It's hurt me a lot. That is sore. What I'd encourage anyone to do is, no more than the Queen of Feek Lay County, Lauren Sandy, is to get out there, get the hands dirty. I offered Lauren a pair of gloves there when she was doing it, when she was doing trial works for taking the Feek Lay County, and she declined. She said it's good moisturising effect or something like that, which I thought was bizarre. But absolutely, I suppose one of the big ones is to have a herd health plan, come up with a proper vaccination programme to limit maybe any of those things. I think probably over COVID, we've got more familiar with the idea of vaccinations because previously on farm, you know, when a farmer had an outbreak of the disease that they'd previously vaccinated for, they were absolutely, you know, sick and they were like, sure, I'm vaccinating for it and I'm still getting it. But it shows even with COVID how much worse it can be if you don't vaccinate it and the level of animals that get into that critical situation that need that real intervention with antibiotics is reduced. I think probably from just chatting to vets, the likes of Bernard, they're using a lot of anti-inflammatories. And as always, it's prevention is better than cure. And even to having the right plane and nutrition is very important. So having stock in the right grass, having an adequate supply of minerals is very, very important because a lot of these minerals contain antioxidants, which are very, very important, and vitamins to reinforce the immune system.
But I do think farmers are more than willing to help, though. It is a huge threat, but the willingness I do think is there, and there probably is progress to be made. But like, even take dry cow therapy, for example. The days of blanket treatment are probably gone behind us. But I know even here from ourselves at home and quite a few other farms you'd be chatting to, they're going selective dry cow therapy and get on really quite well. So there's a few positives to be had on that front. So I think for the vast majority of people, they're keen enough to buy into, because both more than the general population needing the antibiotics. I suppose we as farmers want them to be as sustainable as possible too, so that they're there moving forward.
Yeah, they have the impact, yeah. But yeah, like, I suppose in the Republic of Ireland, Owen, there's still probably, I know I'm in around the right ballpark with the exact figure James is going to cut into this, but there's, I think, as high as 40% of herds maybe aren't milk recording, even though selective dry cow therapy is coming and mandated. Listen, it's going to be a very important tool, as you say, Owen, in that selective dry cow therapy. And as you said, a lot of people who have got on very well with selective dry cow therapy. It's worked perfectly.
100%, but you do need the milk recording there to work off. I suppose that's a fundamental, isn't it?
Oh yeah, sure. Not sure without it, like.
Again, as well, I think when you're talking about these resistance and all these antibiotics, I think farmers themselves, if they actually think about it, you think about when they get mastitis maybe during the summer or something, and one tube isn't working, they have to change tubes. And why is that? Their herd is coming resistant to that tube, whatever antibiotics or whatever is in the tube, that active agent that is going to help cure the mastitis. And when you think about it, it's just building resistance to that tube on that farm. And that's where I suppose the red tube is going to come in, kind of help farmers maybe think about what they is going in and what is actually going to be of benefit to the farmer coming in the future.
That's great, lads. And Owen, a special thank you for coming on for your first podcast there with us. I know that you're looking forward to receiving your SodPod jersey. We will consider giving it to you. It depends on how the listenership goes. We're going to blame you, even though the topics are a bit tricky. But no, seriously, it was great to have you on. We look forward to hearing more from you as the season progresses.
No hassle. Thanks for having me.
No bother at all. Mind yourselves out there. Farm smart, farm safe.
Hey, thanks for listening to the Sod Pod. We hope you enjoyed it. To find out more, head over to www.grasslandagro.ie or check out our social channels, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, LinkedIn and YouTube. That's all for this episode. See you next time.